Tech of Sports, episode 10 for May 16th, 2012. NHRA drag racer and founder of Breaks, Doug Herbert. Netcast Studio mobile apps are a great way to receive our content for your smart devices. There's an app for both iOS and Android, and don't forget the Stitcher Radio app for all iOS devices. Stitcher Radio is an award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone and tablet. Stitcher is smart radio for your smartphone. And the Tech of Sports is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network at techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's here. The Tech of Sports is a production of Netcast Studio at netcaststudio.com, where you can join us every Wednesday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific at netcaststudio.com/live. You can also join the chat room and listen to the show live. And I just want to welcome all the listeners out there today, where we're going to talk about a sport we haven't talked about on here yet in our first 10 episodes. It's the sport of drag racing. And it's one of the most family-friendly sports and regarded as one of the best values for your hard-earned entertainment dollar when it comes to the world of motorsports. And for over 60 years, the NHRA has been the governing body and leading promoter of drag racing in North America. The NHRA Full Throttle Drag Racing Series is the top division of NHRA drag racing and puts on over 20 national events and hundreds of other organized drag races around the country. The sport of drag racing has always led the way when it comes to implementation of innovative technology in motorsports. We're going to talk all that and more tonight with our special guest, NHRA Top Fuel drag racer, Doug Herbert. And Doug, appreciate you joining us tonight.
You bet. Yeah, good to have you to be on your show. I appreciate you guys inviting me on.
Great. And Doug is a 10-time NHRA Top Fuel National Event winner, and he also was a finalist 28 times. He's an Eagle Scout, a pilot, and owner of Doug Herbert Performance Parts, which sells and fabricates high-performance parts for cars, trucks, and boats. And more importantly, in January of 2008, Doug founded Breaks, a nonprofit organization that raises awareness among teenagers and their parents about the importance of safe driving. We'll talk about Breaks, his foundation, the drag racing, and where the sport is heading tonight. Doug's joining us from, how's everything in North Carolina, Doug?
Oh, it's nice. Weather's good. My shop actually is right across the street from Charlotte Motor Speedway, and so people are filing in there, getting set up for the All-Star race, and so a lot going on around here right now.
Good. I'm sure you appreciate all the traffic that'll be going by.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. There are a lot of fans come in, and, you know, we have different fan items at my shop besides just race car parts. We have stuff, and so, yeah, it's a great thing being there in the kind of the heart of the motorsports here in the U.S. really. Charlotte, now that we not only have the Charlotte Motor Speedway, but ZMAX Dragway and the dirt track there, there's definitely a lot going on here in Charlotte in the motorsports world.
Yeah, and a lot of the teams are based there, and we'll talk about drag racing here, and as opposed to the more popular sport in the Carolinas would be stock car racing. But what does it feel like to go from 0 to 300 plus miles an hour in less than 4 seconds? And what is the toll that it takes on your body? You've been doing it for years and years. Have you noticed anything that's happened to you over the years because of all the G's and all the pressure on you there?
Well, I think it's something you get used to. You know, Chris Kiramassini's is still out there racing, and he's like 80 years old.
Sure.
And actually does a pretty good job. So I think it's just I think it's something that if your mind is into it, drag racing is probably more of a concentration type of a deal than it is to be a terrible toll on your body. Although, like Joe Amato and Big Daddy Don Garlitz have both had, you know, their retinas torn apart in their eyes from drag racing, and not the acceleration, but the deacceleration. When the parachutes come out, it feels like you hit a wall, and the car goes from, you know, basically 300 miles an hour to 200 miles an hour in about 1 second. So that's a pretty, you know, that really takes a little getting used to there, and you've got to be prepared for it.
Yeah, I know being at the races and an observation I made is a lot of the drag racers are not real tall. They're smaller stature people, and I guess that, you know, makes it easier to get in and out of the car, but you're tall. How is that different for you? Do they have to make adjustments to the car because you're, you know, 6'3", 6'4", and a lot of these guys are, you know, under 6 feet?
Well, yeah, you know, my cars are always been made for me. My cars I had made for years. Al Swindle up in Seattle, Washington, built my cars until he passed away in the late 90s. And I moved over to McKinney, and Murph McKinney's been building my car since then. But cars dragsters are built kind of like a custom pair of shoes, basically. They're made to fit on you. So, like, if Kenny Bernstein got in my car, he wouldn't be able to see over the steering wheel. So I think it's just a matter of having the car that's actually built for you. So I sit in that car, and even though it's kind of tight, it's very comfortable. I can sit in the car and relax and be able to focus and pay attention to the driving, which is really the most important thing about drag racing, is being able to really get into into the zone. You got to really get in the zone. You got to be focused. And I think that's what makes you good. And that's what I've been able to do in the car. I was the number one reaction time in NHRA for several different years. And I think, being able to focus and concentrate on accomplishing, what you have to do, which is leave the starting line on time, drive the car straight, be aware of what's going on, and make sure that, the most important thing probably about driving a top fuel car or a funny car is knowing when to shut it off. You get to a certain point and you have to know when to shut it off, because that's when you've got to know how to stay out of trouble, and knowing when to shut it off is a big part of that.
Yeah, the shutoff, does that happen kind of, is it a mental type thing? You kind of know mentally when to do it, or are you actually able to see where you are on the strip and you know now it's time to shut it off? How do you get to, I know with a lot of experience you get to know how to do it, but how is that taught, and how do you do that?
Knowing when to shut it off at the finish line, but knowing when to shut it off when, you want to be driving the car, and as soon as the driver doesn't feel like they're actually driving the car, then that's the time to shut it off. You got to stay a little bit ahead of the car. Even though going down the track under, in the run under power is only, 4 seconds, if any of the listeners have ever been in like a car accident before and you're like skidding and you're going to hit something and that's going slow motion in your head, that's kind of what it's like driving a top fuel car. Even though it's only 4 seconds going down the track, it feels like it's 5 minutes. It takes a long time because your mind is going in kind of a high rate of speed, focusing and concentrating on what you're doing. And it seems like it takes a long time to go down the track, even though it actually doesn't take very long at all.
When does that focus start that you just talked about, or being in the zone? Does it start when your car's being towed into the lanes, or does it start when you get in the car? When does that click for you?
It's when, as soon as you get, I kind of try and put myself into the zone of helmet on. So as soon as I put my helmet on, I tune out. And the only thing that really matters right then is what you're doing. You know, there are all these other things going on in life, and you forget about everything. And it's really hard, if you think about it, to forget about absolutely everything to be able to focus on one particular thing. And there's a lot going on with the car. You know, the car's shaking. There's a lot of vibration there. Is something wrong? Is everything right? There's nitro fumes coming in your face. The guy in the other lane might be trying to play a game. Did you do the burnout too long? Did you, are you staging the car at the right amount of time? All these things are critical, but you've got to be able to forget about all them and focus on driving the car when it's time to, when it's time to drive the car and, down the track, and also to be able to pay attention to all the different things that are going on and knowing if there's a vibration or some kind of a weird feeling that you have, to know when to shut the car off. I've had to shut the car off a few times, and the crew chief will ask, well, why'd you shut the car off? And I said, well, something's wrong. And then you go, they dig into it, start finding out, and you find out that this tire was coming apart, or this piston was burned, or the main bearing was spun on the engine and it was getting ready to kick a rod out. So all these things are going on. And when you're in the car, you just kind of have to, I think a lot of the drivers that have been driving for a long time can focus enough to where they can feel, I guess it's basically a feel for anything that's going on in the car. And when something's going wrong, it's not going right, and you shut the car off and you come back and run it again later.
Yeah, a lot of variables, and you didn't even mention weather and track conditions and those other things you got to be concerned about as well.
Well, yeah, tuning the car is a whole nother thing. Yeah, so you would think like, driving a top fuel car, well, that's not too big deal. I mean, the cars, all the tracks are the same length, and it's all the same. Well, I think there's more to it. I think there's a lot to it. I guess it could be evidenced by like Alan Johnson's team. They've been pretty dominant the last few years, and then all of a sudden this year they've got two new drivers and they're having trouble even not even winning races. They're having trouble winning rounds. So I think that it's a matter of the crew, the driver, everybody together well. But I think there's a lot to the feel and just the general driving the car and how does it go and the feel that you have for it.
Definitely. Talk about coming from a drag racing family, and they always talk about drag racing as such a great family sport, and you know, generations and generations, you know, of drag racers come from certain families. Why is it such a great family sport?
Well, I think one reason why it's so much is because your time is spent working on the car, you know. So that's kind of a bonding experience for a family is, you know, they're sitting around in their garage working on the car, or they're at their shop working on the car, or they're at the racetrack working on the car. The driving the car part is kind of the fun part that really is not a big percentage of the time. The main percentage of the time is all the preparation and work going into it. And so I think that's probably where a lot of the family comes into it, as far as the racer side of it. And, you know, because when I was young, I got involved. My dad had race cars, and so I would get involved trying to work on the race car and help where I can. And but not only from the racer side, but also from the fan side. I think it's NHRA is a family-friendly sport. I mean, you could go to any NHRA drag race, and kids that are under 13, they get in for free. You can come in the pits. Kids, of course, always like going up to the drivers, meeting the drivers, getting pictures, getting autographs. And that's something that you can do at an NHRA race. And you can't do that at a NASCAR race or an IndyCar race or most other forms of any kind of professional sport. So that, I think, is a really, really good thing. And I think that's one of the key benefits to NHRA drag racing is the fan accessibility and the fun and the atmosphere of being able to be in the middle of everything.
Yeah, the drivers are very accessible, and the pits are accessible, and you know, you can get close to the pits and see how the people working on the cars, and it's really interesting. Even for people that really aren't gearheads, it's interesting to see how it all comes together.
It really is. There's a lot that goes into it, and I think people that don't understand that, I've yet to have a person come to a drag race. You know, somebody that I've talked to, you know, I've talked into, hey, come to the drag race. I'm telling you, you'll like it. I've never had somebody come to a drag race and then afterwards they go, thanks, but I just don't like it. And I think the reason for that is just all the excitement that goes on at the race. It's not only the racing, but it's what's going on in the pits and meeting the people, watching the people, watching all the crews work on the cars. It's like a machine going, it's synchronized, it's synchronized mechanic work going on the cars with the teams, all the stuff at the manufacturer's row at NHRA, whether it's with the Army, you know, interaction stuff or all the manufacturers, the different vendors there, they've all got interactive activity. So there's a lot of things going on right now, like Traxxas. You can go to the NHRA races. You can drive around some of those neat Traxxas RC cars, sure, which is pretty fun. But there's just a lot of interaction that goes on at NHRA that doesn't really go on. In a NASCAR race, you go to the race, you maybe catch a few things on your way in, but then you sit there the whole time and you watch the race, and then when the race is over, you leave. Where at NHRA race, you go, you walk through, you check out all the things on your way, you watch some racing, and then you go back and you walk through the manufacturer's area and the activity area, and then you could go in the pits, you watch the guys work on the car, and then they get ready to go race again, and then you back up and you watch some more racing. So there's just a lot going on. There's a lot of opportunity to see different things and check out different things. And I think that's one of the reasons why it's the most fan-friendly sport, really.
Yeah, I agree. Whenever the cars come in after a run or before a run, you see the crew chief on a computer and looking at data and analyzing data. How important are those computers, and what are they actually looking at when they're sitting in the trailer, you know, looking at the numbers from a previous race?
Well, there's a lot of data. The computers monitor probably at least over 100 different activities on the car, whether it's RPMs, pressures, linear transducers, timing. You know, there's just a million things that they monitor. The computers on the car are only to collect data. The computer cannot control any function. Everything on the car has to be either controlled by the driver or preset by the crew chief. It can't. There can't be self-compensating devices like traction control or whatever on the cars. Not to say that there might not be some guys out there running that and cheating, but I think in general, most of the guys play by the rules. So any rate, there's you know, that data that we download from the car, we turn it into charts and graphs, and then that data is analyzed, and you can help make tuning decisions from that information, whether it's a chart or looking at a graph, and you can overlay graphs. I think there's a lot of different ways. Probably a lot of different crew chiefs look at different information to come up with the particular thing that is important to them. Some guys might look at exhaust temperatures. Other crew chiefs might not care about exhaust temperatures. They look at the pistons and the bearings and the rings and stuff like that. So I think there's definitely a lot of technology into drag racing, and I think that's probably one of the things that's made it more exciting over the years. Especially coming up here from, looking at my car from 20 years ago that we went 300 miles an hour into looking at the car now, there's a lot of technology and a lot of new things there.
You talked a few years ago about trying to break the land speed record in a specially designed car, and tell the listeners a little about that and what you would be driving and where you would try to do that and some of the technology you looked at for that endeavor.
Yeah, well, we started this project to go race at the Salt Flats, my dad and I, in 2008. So our goal is to go to the Bonneville Salt Flats and run a car that sets the world land speed record for a wheel-driven vehicle and hopefully go about 500 miles an hour. Well, my dad, he passed away in 2009. And in 2008, my friend Ray Evernham and I, well, Ray kind of knew what we were doing. I was telling him, and he said, hey, he was interested in that. So Ray Evernham's my partner on the car. And, we're still going on the car. The car's probably about 80% done. It looks like we're probably not going to get it done this year to go run at Bonneville, where it's probably going to be next year before it's finished. There's a lot going on with it. So your listeners could go to the website for the car. It's lsrproject.com for like LSR, like land speed record. project.com, or they could go to my racing website, which is DougHerbertRacing.com, and it's pretty neat. I got to do a little bit of updates on the LSR project website, but it's a pretty neat deal. The car's a really an engineering masterpiece. It's a twin engine car. The engines are counter rotating, four wheel drive, really really low frontal area, and really really low drag coefficient. So the car should really be one of the most technologically advanced cars to run at Bonneville, and I think we can go out there and accomplish the record as long as everything goes right. But in racing, all bets are off. But in reality, the car should be a pretty good car. It's definitely capable of going out there and probably running close to 500 miles an hour.
Does it resemble or feel like a top fuel dragster in any way at all?
Well, running at Bonneville, the course is 5 miles long, so it's like a 5 mile drag strip, which takes a little over 100 seconds. So it's the car won't accelerate, obviously, anything like a top fuel car. It'll take, I think by about 2 miles, it'll be up to probably maybe 300 miles an hour in 2 miles. And then, you've got another 3 miles to continue building up speed. So by about the fourth mile, the car should be going maybe around 470 or 480 miles an hour, and then by the end of the fifth mile, so hopefully it should be over 500 miles an hour.
Yeah, it's going to be real interesting to keep tabs on that, and we wish you luck. We wish you good luck with that. You can take a little break here for a second. I'm going to do a quick spot for Amazon.com, and for all the listeners out there, if you're doing any shopping in the coming weeks, coming months on Amazon, you can use the affiliate link here at Netcast Studio. It is netcaststudio.com/Amazon, and there's no extra cost to you for using it, and you help support Netcast Studio and the variety of shows it offers. And I always give a pick on here, something you can order off of Amazon. And since we're talking drag racing, there's a great picture book that came out maybe about 10 years ago. It's called The Fast Lane, the History of NHRA Drag Racing. And inside it, there's over 200 full-color, high-definition photos. And shows a lot of the drivers, the fans, and all the pomp and circumstance that makes NHRA drag racing what it is. So that's available on Amazon. And if, like I said again, you can go to netcaststudio.com/Amazon for that. And Doug, coming out of the break, You meant touched on it a little bit before. Tell the listeners how they can visit your website, either for your racing and for your performance parts, and anything else you want to promote right now.
Well, my parts website is just DougHerbert.com. My racing website is DougHerbertRacing.com. Also, if you go to that website, it'll link you in. The racing website, it's kind of pretty new, and so it'll link you into the parts website. It'll link you into the Landspeed website. And also, my charity is called Brakes, and you kind of talked about that a little bit. But in 2008, my two sons were killed in a car accident. And so since then, I started this 501c3 charity organization that we train kids, teenagers. We train them to be better drivers. And our instructors are like the caliber of instructors that teach the Secret Service guys that drive the president, that caliber of a driver and instructor. So it's pretty neat. We've trained almost 5,000 teenagers how to be better drivers, you know, behind the wheel, hands-on training, you know, showing them distractions, showing them analog braking. How does that work? How does it feel? You know, showing them on a skid pad, you know, where there's an edge on the car. Like, you can't take it past a certain point. You don't want to be just a passenger holding onto a steering wheel driving the car. So there's all these things that we teach them that you really don't learn in driver's ed, and you don't learn until you get into a situation where you might get into an accident. So what we do is we try to give them a little bit of experience so they can go out the road and be a little more experienced, a little better, and be a little more responsible behind the wheel.
Yeah, I think Brakes is a great initiative that you have going on, and out of something terrible that happened to you, something really good came out of that, and I really commend you for that. And I mean, there's no substitute for experience with teenage drivers, and you're giving them that. And what kind of feedback do you get from the parents of the kids on that when they go through that training? Are they just ecstatic about it?
Yeah, the feedback we get is just tremendous. You know, that. Typically at 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning or a Sunday morning, and a kid's getting drug out there by their parents, you know, and they're not very happy about it. And usually by about 9:30, everything's turned around, and the teenagers are like, this was, you know, the comments that we get from them at that point are like, you know what, this is cool. I had no idea how much I was going to learn here. This is one of the best days of my life. So to hear a teenager actually be that excited about learning how to be a better driver and being safer driving on the road, that makes it all worthwhile. And you know, I think we try and I guess you could say we try and scare them just a little bit, because most teenagers, and heck, I didn't even know that there's between 5,000 to 6,000 teenagers every year that are killed in car accidents on the road. It's the number one killer of teenagers. And we just try and get that point across to them. Like, guys, there's a reason why. And it's generally because, you know, teenagers are behind the wheel and they're not paying as much attention as they should. And they're getting in accidents, so we want to try and make you better. And it's pretty neat. They seem to learn a lot once they talk to the instructors a little bit. All of our instructors are real nice people. They're mostly men, but we have some really great women instructors too. And you know, when the teenagers start talking to them, and they find out that there's really such a job as being a professional driver. You know, it's somebody that maybe does ride and drive demonstrations for Mercedes, or they do commercials for BMW driving the cars, or they teach the Secret Service guys about defensive driving. It just kind of opens up their eyes to realize, wow, there's kind of a lot more to it than I thought. And you know, let's face it, teenagers don't necessarily want to listen to their parents. And the fact is that most parents are who teaches the teenagers how to drive. And they learn how to drive before they ever get their driver's license because they're watching their parents drive. So if their parents have bad habits driving, the chances are the teenagers are going to have bad habits driving. So, you know, we try and do that. The parents actually are required to come with the teenagers, and the parents go through school at the same time with a separate set of instructors. So the teenagers and the parents both go through schools. And at the end, we bring them back together and talk to them a little bit, wrap it up, kind of give a little bit better understanding between them. And I think other than making them better drivers, we also kind of try and, you know, help them have a little bit better relationship and realize how valuable life is and how valuable the relationship between a parent and a teenager is.
Yeah, and I think it's great that the NHRA's really got behind you on this. And how much support have you received from other drag racers and the drag racing community as a whole, and maybe from other motorsports? Are they involved in it as well?
Yeah, it's tremendous. I mean, we've received just an unbelievable amount of support from the NHRA and from everybody that's involved in the NHRA, all the racers, you know, John Force, right on down the line, Don Schumacher, Connie Coletta has been one of our great supporters. So there's just the outreach of support from drag racing has been tremendous, but also from NASCAR. Ricky Rudd, he comes out to the schools. He talks to the teenagers. His teenager came through our school, and so he's been pretty excited. Randy LaJoy, Bobby Allison, Barry Dodson. I mean, all these guys that are pretty darn good NASCAR racers. Kyle Busch goes out and does stuff with me, talking to teenagers, going to schools, and just reminding kids that, hey, you know, you can make a bad decision, it'll affect you the rest of your life. So try and think about it just a little bit and before you make the decisions. And I think that, you know, I think it's a little bit of we can make a little bit of an impact on teenagers to make better decisions. And really, that's what Breaks is all about.
Sure.
The NHRA has been tremendous supporting us. And I think that I have actually helped them a little bit, too, because, you know, you turn on the TV news and you know, the TV reporters will say, oh, these kids were killed. They were drag racing over here on, you know, Route 31 or whatever. Well, then they call the NHRA and they tell them, hey, what do you got to say about these kids that were killed drag racing? And they're like, well, they really weren't drag racing. And what they do now is they say, you need to call Doug Herbert. He's one of our top fuel racers. He's one of our guys. It's that's a race winner that, you know, that's won championships drag racing. And we'd like for you to call him because he's kind of our teenage driving liaison. And so reporters will usually call me. They'll get talking to me a little bit. I'll tell them my story and what we're doing. And generally, I can get them to understand that what these teenagers were doing on the road and when they got hurt or they got killed doing something silly, that wasn't drag racing. You know, that was street racing. Drag racing we do at a racetrack, and there's safety involved. And there's, you know, seat belts and helmets and safety crews and guard walls and all these things that are not, they're just not there when you're driving down the street and doing something dumb. So I think we've been able to get the message across. And basically NHRA, the motto for NHRA is safety. And so I think that I've tried to support that and get behind that. When the NHRA started, it was all the kids out in Southern California back in the late 40s, early 50s were all out getting hurt drag racing. And Wally Parks decided, hey, we're going to put this together. We're going to take this out here to Santa Ana Airport and turn this into a drag race. And that's what they did. And now that's turned into NHRA drag racing.
Yeah, it's, you know, drag racers have their differences over the years, but this is really one cause that they can all get together behind, and I think it's great they're helping you with that. And you mentioned a name a few minutes ago, and your name was John Force, and he's the biggest name in drag racing, and he's got a successful team. And I just wanted you to touch real quickly on the multi-car teams kind of dominating drag racing, and that's nothing new, but do you feel that's good for the sport, and does that bring rivalries into the equation, do you think, or is that kind of looked at as an unfair advantage in a sport where, I mean, nothing's ever completely fair for everybody, but does that hurt the fairness, you think, of the sport a little bit?
Well, I mean, you know, let's face it, drag racing has become big business, and it's, you know, you can't go out there and have a bunch of weekend warriors run your car on a couple thousand bucks a weekend and plan on going and winning the top fuel race. It's a big buck deal. It's going to cost you, you know, over, you know, well over $100,000 and probably more like a couple $100,000 or maybe even more to go run a top fuel car for a weekend. So it's became really serious and it's expensive and you kind of think like the team like Force or Schumacher, but then last week, Steve Torrence won down there in Atlanta with a single car, brand new team. So, you know, I think that a little bit like NASCAR, these big super teams are kind of coming in and winning a lot of the races. But you know what? There's an opportunity for somebody to go in there and work hard and do a good job and be able to win and be competitive. And I think, I think Torrence and Richard Hogan showed us that last week when they won top fuel down in Atlanta.
Yeah, I would say the equivalent in another sport would be like the Kansas City Royals beating the New York Yankees to go to the World Series. That's kind of the advantage that the teams with the money have.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, it's big time, but hard work is really what it's about. And I think over the years, you know, when we've gotten on a roll and won races, like in 1999, we won four races in 1 year, and we're really looking pretty good to win the championship. And it was just a lot of hard work. And you know, what's the old saying is, like, luck is where preparation and opportunity meet. And I'm a firm believer in that. I think the harder you work, the luckier you get.
Sure, I agree. What's your vision for drag racing? Where do you see it heading in the future? Are we going about as fast as we're going to go right now, or is there still speed to be found to keeping it as safe as it is now? Or I know it's a delicate balance, but is there more speed, you think, to be found?
Well, I think there's a lot more speed to be found. The problem is the safety aspect. Really the biggest issue with drag racing right now is we need to attract the younger fans. You know, we need the teenagers and the 20-year-olds to come in and enjoy drag racing. And it's all kind of based on that old hot rodding deal, you know, where back when I was a kid anyways, you know, we worked on the car and you could take it out to the racetrack. Well, there's not as many kids working on cars now. And, you know, you go to high schools and there's not that many auto shops. Like, there used to be a lot of auto shops and metal shops and wood shops, and there's just not as much of that anymore. So I think we've got to figure a way how to make the fans and the teenagers and the 20-year-old guys and women realize how much technology is in drag racing and get them excited about coming out and watching the drag races and being excited about it and what's going on. So I think that's the first thing. The second thing is, you know, the speeds. There's really no end to it. The cars can continue to go faster and quicker, but the problem that we've ran into is we're limited to tires. You know, the tires are probably pushed about as hard as we can push them. And, you know, at some point, that's when the NHRA has to step in and say, you know what, we've got to slow these cars down. I think that top fuel cars are never going to be less than 300 miles an hour. But, you know, in 2008, after Scott Coletta was killed up in Englishtown in that bad accident, we only ran one more race in a quarter mile. And I actually won that race. So there's an answer to a trivia question. Who was the last NHRA drag racer to win a quarter mile drag race? That would be me. So that's kind of cool. At any rate.
Great question.
Yeah. So, but to make a real long story short, you know, NHRA in the name of safety went from a quarter mile to 1,000 feet. And, you know, the speeds went from roughly like mid 330s down to about 320. And now the speeds at 1,000 feet are up over 330. So if we were running a quarter mile now, the cars would be going over 350 miles an hour. Well, the problem is the tires just aren't capable of handling that speed with the, you know, with the downforce. And, you know, so you've got 8,000 pounds roughly of downforce pushing down, 8,000 horsepower. So there's just all these different things going into it. And I think the limiting factor right now is probably tires. So I would venture to guess that, you know, there's going to be limitations imposed somewhere to keep the cars either where they are, or if they decide to go back to a quarter mile, they're going to probably have to slow the cars down somehow. And how they do that, I really don't know. There's a lot of theories out there. There's a lot of things that have been tested. But I think that right now with the current situation with safety and with tires, insurance and all this other stuff, I think they're comfortable with the speeds where they are right now. I don't think that, even though the cars are definitely capable of going a lot faster, I think in the name of safety and, you know, let's face it, we don't need a bunch of guys and women out there driving these race cars that get killed. So they're watching that very carefully and probably take input from the teams and from manufacturers and from, you know, safety equipment people and a lot from Goodyear Tire. It's just a matter of how fast do we think the cars can go and not have ridiculous risks involved. And, you know, we know there's a risk involved. I mean, you drive every time you get in a race car that goes 330 miles an hour, you know there's a risk involved. But it's got to be a little bit of a calculated risk. It can't be just a thrill seeker, ridiculous risk that there's a great chance of getting hurt or killed or having a tire come apart, because we know we're pushing them probably at the maximum that we can be pushing them right now. Your question or not, but the cars can go faster, but they're probably not going to let them go a whole lot faster just because the technology for the safety and mostly in the tire area is probably not there right now.
Well, I think in addition to the tires, and you touched on it a little bit, the shutdown areas aren't long enough if you're going faster. So I think that at some of the tracks, that's an issue. So I think maybe that they'll have to take that into consideration as well.
Right. I wouldn't be surprised to see the NHRA at some point, probably not this year, but maybe next year, saying that they're going to do a quarter mile drag race somewhere. Say, okay, we're going to have a special event. It's going to be a quarter mile drag race. And they're probably going to have to impose some kind of limitation on them to keep them from going faster than they're already going. In other words, we're not going to go out there and take the same car. So they go 350 miles an hour. They probably try and limit it somehow. So it's still going around 330 miles an hour.
Sure.
In the mile. But I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen. I think I would be surprised to see him go back to quarter mile, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him come out with an event that's a quarter mile event.
Sure. Yeah, I agree with you. They'll have a novelty event, probably one of the longer shutdown area tracks where they'll try that. Before we get to the final question, I just wanted to make a final mention for a new sponsor, and it's Ultimate Pond Products. And with the summer here and spending time outside, there's nothing better than enjoying a nice natural stone waterfall. And you can build your own with simple one-box solutions from Ultimate Pond Products. You can install an attractive, durable pond or waterfall, and it's very easy. It's a one-day job, and you can see and order the great products by visiting netcaststudio.com/UPP for Ultimate Pond Products. netcaststudio.com/UPP. So you can check that out if you want. And Doug, I always finish up with the last question, asking all my guests, the one piece of modern technology that you don't think you can live without now, either in your professional or personal life, what do you think that would be?
Oh, the cell phone.
That's what most people say.
Yeah, cell phone. I mean, it's a curse, I guess, in some respects. But, I don't know how you'd get by without it, to be honest with you. I was talking to Kenny Bernstein earlier today, and he spent a lot of time in Montana and just kind of relaxing, and running and hunting and fishing and relaxing. And I think that's the thing that he seems to not miss at all is the constant cell phone. So I think cell phone's probably the one thing you can't live without, but the one thing that you want to live without.
Sure. You almost wonder for how all those years we survived without it. So we use it so much now.
Oh yeah. Payphones have kind of gone the way of the dodo bird. Can't even think of the last time I've seen a payphone.
Yeah. Payphone. What's that? Give one more plug for your websites, Doug, and your business and breaks one more time.
Yeah. Well, my main website is just DougHerbert.com. You could go there and there's, parts and all this. I think there's links to some of the other websites, but DougHerbertRacing.com is my new racing website. There's a lot of pictures on there. There's a lot of statistics. There's a lot of information on there. It's got links to brakes. There's links to the Land Speed Project. So Doug Herbert Racing is a good place to go. They can get, learn a little bit about what's going on in my world. Also follow on Twitter, at Doug Herbert on Twitter, or my Facebook page is Top Fuel Doug.
Yeah, you're real active on Twitter and with your fans, and they seem to like that. And I really appreciate you being on, and not only because you have a lot of fans that admire you as a drag racer, but a lot of fans that admire you because you were such a good competitor and a good sportsman, and you're giving back, doing a lot of things with breaks, and I know your fans appreciate that, and just people in general, they really admire that, because it's something you don't have to do, but you love doing it, and you really put a lot of your own time into it, and people really appreciate that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, my favorite motto actually is, it doesn't cost anything to be nice. So I try and live by that, and it just kind of makes every day go by a little bit easier.
Now, outside of that one maybe blow up on ESPN2 one time, I think you've always lived by that pretty. So.
Yeah, we had a little staging. Clay Milliken had a little staging duel. So, yeah, people could go to YouTube and search like Doug Zilla, and they could find that staging duel with Milliken. But, there again, drag racing's a pretty big family. Clay and I have gotten together and made some, done some public service announcement commercials about safe driving. And so, at the end of the day, we're all here. We're all here for not really a long time. And it's kind of good to look out after your fellow competitors and friends, and what you'll find that you probably got a lot in common with a lot of different people.
Sure. Yeah, the NHRA really is one big family, and that's what fans love, and it makes it really interesting. And I want to let everybody know that Netcast Studio has many other shows which may interest you, and you can head over to netcaststudio.com and check out the variety of shows available. You've been listening to the Tech of Sports podcast on Netcast Studio Production.